and welcome. You're listening to the hashtag STRAsk podcast. I'm Amy Hall, and Greg Kokel is here with me to respond to your questions. Hey, Greg. So today we have something kind of fun. I have some questions.
Yeah, the rest of the shows are really dull. I know. I'm glad we're finally having a fun show, Amy.
I have collected some questions from kids. So we are going to look at those today.
The children's hour.
So the first one comes from – they're all through the parents, but here we go. Thomas M. Crawford says, our four-year-old was watching a show about Rahab, and he completely vexed his parents with a question. Why did she lie? Is it okay?
Well, the simple answer is, in some circumstances, it is okay to lie. Now, this really rubs a lot of Christians the wrong way. But let me just go back to that account. There is no indication in that account that what Rahab did was wrong. In fact, in the account, when you read it, it seems pretty clear that Rahab did the right thing. She protected the lives of the Jewish spies, and she did it because she feared the Lord. Now, keep in mind, by the way, this happens 40 years plus after the Exodus, and the nations are still trembling by what they have heard God did to Egypt. Okay. And so she kind of knows, my mama didn't raise no dummies kind of thing. I get it. I know who you guys are. You're with that powerful God, and I'm on your side. So I'm going to protect you. But protecting them required, under the circumstances, that she had to lie. She had to tell them she didn't know where they were, but they went out a different way kind of deal, and to deceive. And so the question then becomes, so this seems to me obvious in the text that the deception there was appropriate. And incidentally, Rahab shows up, I think, in at least two places in the New Testament, certainly in the book of James, chapter 2, when her lying and hiding the Jewish spies, the Hebrew spies, is an evidence of her faith. And incidentally, it's you could say, well, she didn't have to lie. Well, wait a minute. If she's going to hide them, she has to lie, because lying is entailed in the hiding. Here, we're going to hide these men. Where are they? Oh, right over there. Well, that's not hiding. Okay. And in the book of Hebrews, I think she's mentioned in the Hall of Fame for faith. So everything that we know about Rahab is good. And at least in these behaviors, she had obviously a soiled profession, but nevertheless, she served the living God. She has statements to that effect as she expresses her faith in that section in the book of Judges. And it turns out she's a great, 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 and add them all up, grandmother of Jesus of Nazareth. She's on the lineage. Okay, so this is kind of a way of God honoring her actions, her act of faith by hiding the spies. So I think inductively and internally, we look at the text and it's obvious that what she did was the right thing. Now the question becomes broader and ethical. From an ethical perspective, how can lying be right? And there's only one way that lying could be right, and that is if the lying prevents some greater harm or evil than not lying. All right, so let me explain that. When we live in a fallen world, we are often placed in a position where we have one of two choices. And both choices, when done individually, would be wrong. We call this an ethical dilemma. Between a rock and a hard place, between the devil and the deep blue sea. We have phrases to describe this kind of thing. So it's fairly common. In fact, it's very common. And if we think about it all throughout the day in our work and stuff, we are considering options that have moral implications, and we have to balance these things out. Now, the only way we can solve that dilemma is if some wrong things are worse than other wrong things. Or some good things are better than other good things. You could look at it either way. And if everything is equally wrong, there is no way to solve the dilemma. Note, in this dilemma, you are faced with one of two choices. In the case of Rahab, she could either give up the slaves, which is give up God's people to destruction. That's not a good option. Or not. And if she did not give up the slaves, the only way she could not give up the slaves is to hide them, which itself is an act of deception, even if she says nothing with her lips. So in either case, whether she says they're not here or she just hides them and says nothing, she is deceiving. So should she give up these spies, God's people, to death? Or should she lie to protect them from dying? Well, the only way to answer that question is to determine whether giving up people to death is worse than telling a lie. And the answer is pretty obvious. Yes. Clearly in the Bible, some things are worse than others. Jesus himself said to Pilate, "The person who gave me up, who handed me over to you, has the greater sin." So other than common sense indicating that some sins are worse than others, you have Jesus acknowledging that. So this then sets up for our thinking about what's right and wrong, a hierarchy. Some things are more wrong than other things, okay? And that's why we have greater punishments for some things rather than other things. So if a child, smarts off to his friend and says something rude to his friend, well, that they might be chastised for it. But if the child does the exact same thing to his mother or his father, oh, no, that's worse. Okay? So we can see that some things are worse than others. All right? So the way this works out when we make our ethical decisions, when we're stuck with one or another decision, and by the way, I'm noting it has to be an ethical dilemma, which we have with Rahab. When they're stuck with one or another decision, you do your best to determine out which one is the smaller sin, or another way of looking at it is which one is the greater good. So it's a greater good to save a life than it is to tell the truth in that circumstance. And then you do that, which is what Rahab did. And I think it's better to think of doing the greater good rather than choosing the lesser evil, because I actually don't think that if what Rahab did was wrong. It wasn't like, well, it would have been a sin to give up the people, but it would have been a lesser sin to lie. So she did the lesser sin. So Rahab was still wrong, but it was a smaller wrong. Well, I don't get the sense from the text that she was wrong. I think Rahab was right. And this is why she's applauded as a woman of faith, and as by lying and hiding the Hebrew spies, she was exhibiting her faith in God according to James chapter 2. One other difficulty when thinking of it as the lesser of two evils instead of the greater of two goods, which is my view, the second one, is because Jesus lived in a fallen world, and it is certainly possible, it may be inevitable, that Jesus would have faced ethical dilemmas. Now, we know in a lot of cases what looked like an ethical dilemma he was able to get out of. But if he was, in fact, faced with a genuine ethical dilemma, and one or the other was the only option, well, then Jesus would have sinned. If the view is when you choose the lesser evil rather than the greater good. And this is why I think the best way of thinking about it, and the way the scripture seems to represent in the case of Rahab, is that in an ethical dilemma, when you're between a rock and a hard place, ethically, you choose the greater good. And when you do that, you are actually obligated to that. You're obligated to do the greater good, which means Rahab should have lied. It was the right thing for her to do, just like it was the right thing for Corrie ten Boom to break the law and hide Jews in a closet, you know, in a secret room, and then lie about it in a whole host of different ways, including getting false meal cards and all kinds of different illegal things that she did deceptively in order to protect human life. She did the right thing.
Now, when a kid asks this, I can imagine that it could be confusing because, of course, if you're a child, your conscience and your understanding of right and wrong has not been well informed by the Bible. Because, so this could be kind of a scary thing to hear. So I think what you might want to tell your child is that, you know, we have to learn what God loves. We have to learn what's important to God. We have to learn what's right and wrong by reading the Bible. And your parents have spent a lot of time learning about all those things. And so if you find yourself in a position where you're not sure, is this a situation where I should lie in order to do something else? First of all, you should probably assume that it's probably not the right time to lie, but come to us because we can help you work through this because we have worked these things out. We have thought about these things because ethical dilemmas are difficult. And thankfully, you know, this is another thing you can tell your child. When you're making a decision, are you making it for the glory of God? Are you trying to honor God with your decision? If you mess up, well, guess what? We have God's grace. And that's the rest that we have. We do our best to follow what God would have us do. We inform our conscience about how we are supposed to do things, and then we rest in God's grace. And so, I would just encourage your kids to come to you with their questions about how to resolve certain dilemmas that they have. And you can help them and show them, work through it, not just how you think about it, but also in light of God's grace.
Yeah, those are great points, Amy. And I think probably conceptually is just to let them know lying is wrong. All things being equal, lying is wrong. Being unkind to people is wrong. I mean, there's lots of things. These are all wrong. But – and then you can give them illustrations. Is it wrong to disobey the government? Yes, it is. Well, what if the government tells you to disobey God? Then do you disobey God or you disobey the government? Well, I think most kids will get that because you see it in the book of Acts. Well, no, it's then you have to obey God. Okay, good. Well, now this what this teaches us is that some things are more important than other things. And so we are sometimes in situations where we had to make a decision like that. So I think letting them know that there are – I don't like the word absolutes because the word moral absolute suggests that you could never – there's no exceptions. I think it's better to say that there are moral rules that we're obliged to obey because God says that, okay? But some things are more important than others. And when you have – a conflict between those two, you do the more important thing, the greater good. Now, as Amy has pointed out, that's sometimes hard to figure out, and this is where Mom and Dad can help you when you think you run into those circumstances. But as a general rule, do the things that we tell you to do. It's wrong to lie, so you tell the truth.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that this is illustrating to them the idea that morality is objective. That it's not just what you feel like, that there are actual answers out there that we are trying to figure out. And that's a very important thing to communicate to them.
Incidentally, let me add one other thing for the parents here. And I've heard this objection before that, well, if you say that what's right and wrong is depending on the circumstance, that's relativism. And what I want them to see is that is not relativism. Okay, I wrote a book on relativism. I know what relativism is, and that's a misunderstanding. Moral decision-making is always relative to the circumstances. That is, you have to consider all the details of the circumstances, and under that set of circumstances, you want to decide you need to figure out what the right thing to do is. Relativism isn't when the right decision is based on the circumstances. Relativism is when the right decision is based on the subject, the individual. So if Amy and I are facing exactly the same set of circumstances, and there is a moral answer regarding those circumstances, Amy and I are both equally obliged to do the same thing. Now, if Amy said, well, that may be true for you, but it's not for me, I have a different standard. Now, the difference is based on the individual, the subject, and it's relative to the subject. That's why it's called subjectivism. Okay, that's relativism. That's the no-no. But determining right or wrong based on the circumstances is always the case every single time.
Okay, let's do another one. This one comes from Timothy Bear. From my six-year-old son, Caleb, why didn't God allow David to build a temple because he had blood on his hands?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. And it's pretty clear to me that David, being the warrior he was, wasn't wrong. Part of his role as king was to establish the kingdom that God had promised him. Incidentally, just as an aside, notice that God promised David the kingdom, but David still had to fight for it. So God's promise does not preclude our active involvement in fulfilling the promise all the time. Sometimes it does, but sometimes it doesn't. In any event, I mean, any answer I give is going to be speculative, but David was a man of war. That was a significant part of his occupation. And notice, by the way, David didn't actually build the temple. He didn't put his hands on the rocks and put the rocks on top of each other, the bricks, but he would have been the one responsible for it. And that was commissioned to his son in the next generation, Solomon. I guess the only thing I could think of, Caleb, and I'm sorry this isn't a better answer or more thorough, is that King David had one station. He had a basic job, and that is to establish the monarchy under his name and his family. And that was a bloody enterprise because first he had to fight against Saul, and then finally, after Saul died, he had to fight to get his rightful throne. And then later on in his life, his own son Absalom rebelled against him, and he had to flee and then fight. And so his life was a life of tumult and hardship and battle. And some of it he brought on himself, unfortunately. And so I think God's point was, okay, I'm going to deliver the kingdom to Solomon, and then Solomon's going to have a different – he's going to be the builder. And not only did he build the temple, but he built a whole lot of other things, and this is where the entire the kingdom, physical kingdom at the time, reached its greatest and most glorious extent under Solomon. Now, Solomon had his own problems too, but I have a feeling that's not a very good answer to your question, but I'm just speculating. Maybe Amy knows better.
Yeah, ironically, Solomon had a much less of a heart for God than David did, so it does make it interesting. I think the key is in the fact that the temple was carefully designed to communicate things about God. So when you look at all the instructions, I mean, they had to have certain images and certain carvings and colors and lampstands and bread and all these things, sacrifices, all these things were communicating something true about God. And I think David being the warrior that he was, and that being his identity for all the people, God didn't want to confuse that with his temple, because war is a result of the fall. War is not reflective of who God is. God wanted to reveal himself in the temple, and I think he didn't want the temple to be connected with a warrior mindset or killing or war, all those things, as many gods were at the time. God is the one who reconciles us to himself. He is the light. He's the bread. He's like all these things that they were showing in the temple. I think I suspect God wanted to separate himself somewhat from having that being established by a warrior. That's just my guess.
You know, that's actually a really good observation. I'm glad you said guess in a certain sense, just so people know that we're speculating. But he has blood on his hands. He's the fighter. That's his role. But this is a whole different kind of enterprise, and so we're going to give it to a man who has a different kind of calling on his life. Good point, Amy.
Well, that is all the time we have. We'll have to cover these other questions
we'll
from
second,
the kids another time.
Second kids hour. Yeah, we can do it next time.
All right. Thanks again, as always, everyone, for your questions. We appreciate that. Send us the questions on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. Thanks for listening. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.